All right. Good morning, everyone. Good morning. So we're continuing today on in Capitol Nun Beis, Capitol 52. So first of all, just there will be a Tisha B'Av regardless, but halavai we should be zocha that Amir Hashem will be a Tisha B'Av of Simcha. Halavai we should be zocha that we'll be privileged to learn in Yerushalayim, Ashir and Geula, Ashir and Mashiach, Ashir and the Beis Hamikdash. But whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in store for us, we're going to learn on Tisha B'Av. So let's begin with the Capitol Nun Beis. And the truth is, this is our last shiur for this particular year, for this particular semester. So although I want to kind of say on the front end, I'm not going to do this capital justice because there's a lot more to say than just one class's worth of material, but at least we'll begin to gain a little bit of an appreciation. So let's begin, number one, L'Natzeach Maskil L'David. For the conductor, Maskil L'David. Already by now, we already know what all of these particular phrases and words means. Lam Natzeach, David HaMelech wrote this particular capital to be sung by the Levitic choir. The Lam Natzeach, the conductor, is the conductor of the Levitic choir, and Maskil. So we've learned already in the past that whenever David HaMelech begins a particular chapter with Maskil, it means, from Lashon of Seichel, there is an eternal lesson to be learned here. So David HaMelech is telling us, I'm not just giving you information, I'm not just giving you a little bit of history, although again, we're going to see that this is one of those Kapitlach that has incredible historical significance as well. But David HaMelech says, embedded in these words is a very important life lesson. Lam Natzeach Mizmo Maskil David. Bevodoy ka Adomi Vayagi L'shol Vayomer Lo Bo David El Beis Achimelech. So amazingly enough, this is one of the Kapitlach where we know exactly what historical episode David HaMelech is referring to. It says, when Doeg HaAdomi, Doeg the Adomi came and told Shaul that David was hiding in Beis Achimelech. What is this referring to? So again, we're not going to go through the whole thing right now, but if you look at sources 2 and 3, this is for your own edification. This is towards the end of Shmuel Aleph. At this point in time, again, remember, things have changed. The dynamic has shifted between David and his father-in-law, Shaul. Remember, again, we know our Navi, so we know that David HaMelech is the king's son-in-law. And he becomes the king's son-in-law through a meteoric rise in prominence after he kills Goliath, he kills Goliath in a fateful battle. Shaul, first of all, appoints him as a general over the army and gives him his daughter Michal in marriage. Things quickly go south when Shaul realizes that David's popularity is quickly surpassing his own. David could have fought against Shaul. He could have fought against his father-in-law, and he could have won against his father-in-law. Remember again, for one simple reason, how do we know that he could have won? Because God was on his side. A very simple idea that Ribbono Shel Olam told Shmuel HaNavi, tell David, I'm done with Shaul. You are the new anointed king. Not only that, but even when Shaul was appointed king, Shaul was never going to be the father of a dynastic monarchy. At most, had he followed in the ways of God, his son Yonasan could have become king as well. But it was never to be the beginning of dynastic monarchy. Dynasty was only to come from David HaMelech. David HaMelech could have fought. David HaMelech could have stood his ground. But he makes a conscious decision and says, I am not going to fight against my father. Which, by the way, just as an aside, not our topic for today. But is an incredible lesson in life. Not every battle should be waged. Not every battle should be fought. In fact, I would venture to say most battles in life should not be waged. Most battles in life are not worth the fight. Choose your battles wisely. The problem is, so often we become so convinced that everything is a rallying cry, that everything is a milchama that's worth being waged. And you know, when you fight over everything, you stand for nothing. And it's an incredibly important issue. So David HaMelech was within his right to fight this battle, but he chooses not to. And by the way, this becomes a hallmark of the Davidic personality in general, about knowing where to fight, knowing not when to fight, knowing when to wage the battle now, and knowing when to defer the battle to a little bit later on. But it's an incredible study in humility. It's an incredible study in personal strength and resilience. And it's an incredible study in what it means to have a healthy sense of self. Very often, when people need to fight, that often stems from insecurity. People who are secure in themselves do not need to fight every single battle. I don't have to prove someone else wrong in order to be able to prove myself right. That was the greatness of David HaMelech. Again, incredible sense of self and incredible confidence. Even though, again, he didn't really get that from his family. He didn't get it from I'm sorry? He dug deep within himself. We all have all the tools we need. Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us our toolbox when we're born. We just have to open it up and access it. So he goes ahead. So again, so what's happening over here is the following. What's happening over here is David HaMelech runs away from Shaul. So remember again, I forgot to switch off my cell phone in accordance with the... Okay, so David HaMelech chooses not to fight against Shaul. He goes ahead and he steals away in the middle of the night. His wife assists him, and he runs away to the city of Nov. Nov was known as an Ir Kohanim. It was the city where the Kohanim lived. It was where the Mishkan was situated, and David HaMelech runs away there. Now understand, no one knows about the internal civil war that is occurring between David and Shaul. Everything is kept under wraps because Shaul realizes that he cannot go ahead and make a public display of his desire to kill David, because David is one of the most, if not the most, popular man in the entire Jewish kingdom. David HaMelech, to his credit, also has no interest in airing the dirty laundry of the Jewish people, in front of the Jewish people, and therefore, despite the fact that his father-in-law, you know, there might be many sons-in-law who feel that their father-in-law wants to kill them, right? But there are very few where the father-in-law actually takes action like this. But David HaMelech makes a conscious decision not to say anything, to keep it quiet, so he runs away. So what does he do? He runs to Nov, and he says to Achimelech, who is the Kohen Gadol, I am on a secret mission from the king. It's so secret that I had to leave without weapons, without provisions. So Achimelech says, of course, what can we help you with? Achimelech gives him some food, and amazingly enough, in a dramatic, ironic, it's not turn of events, but circle of events, what weapons do they have in the Mishkan? Nothing other than the sword of Goliath. After David HaMelech killed Goliath, killed Goliath, so they kept Goliath's sword and helmet in the Mishkan, almost as like a trophy to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So amazingly enough, that's the one weapon they have, that's the one weapon they give to David, and David goes on with his men. They go on to Gat, to Achish, the king of Gat, afterwards to flee Eretz Yisrael. So meanwhile, who else is in the Mishkan at this time? A man by the name of Doeg. Doeg was one of the trusted advisors of Shaul. Doeg comes back, gives a slanderous report to Shaul, and says, Shaul, Achimelech, and the Kohanim are aiding and abetting the fugitive Shaul. Shaul marches on, David, thank you. Shaul marches on Nov. Baruch Hashem, good, right? Shaul marches on Nov. He accuses Achimelech of treason. Achimelech says, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? Shaul, remember again, Shaul and David are case studies in polar opposite personalities. David HaMelech has an incredible sense of healthy self-security. Shaul suffers from terrible insecurity. You know what happens when a person feels insecure? You know, the litmus test for feeling insecure, you know, sometimes a person feels like everybody's always attacking them. So Klal Gadol is, no one's always attacking you, right? That's very important to understand, to have one's head on straight. If you always feel attacked, often it's a display of personal insecurity. So Shaul feels attacked by everyone, including, again, Achimelech. Shaul orders the city of Nov wiped out. There's a massacre. Shaul massacres the city of Nov. So ultimately, again, if we go back up to number one, David hears about what happened in Nov, and of course, as one could only imagine, the feelings of guilt that David HaMelech had to live the rest of his life with, feeling that he was responsible for the massacre. Now, was he responsible? Of course not. Of course not. The people of Nov were just innocent bystanders. But David HaMelech did draw them into the conflict, and as such, again, feels an incredible sense of guilt for the rest of his life. Which, by the way, is a different aside. How, you know, we live in a society where often, if you're feeling something negative, the goal is, how do you get rid of that feeling as quickly as possible? What could I take? Who could I speak to just to get rid of it? And it's important to understand that sometimes in life you live with guilt. Sometimes in life you live with pain. Sometimes in life you live with failure. And those are feelings you live with. You learn to live with them. You can't necessarily banish or every kind of negative feeling that exists inside. Sometimes life is about learning how to go forward despite having all of that emotional baggage. David HaMelech goes to the grave with this emotional baggage, a feeling that he went ahead and somehow he contributed to the massacre of the city of Nob. He did draw in innocent bystanders. Is he responsible for their massacre? Chas v'shalom. Shaul did what he did. So in any event, back to number one. So what happens? Pasuk Gimel. Now, this particular capital seems to really be focused on Shaul and Doeg. Now, Doeg is the one who is named by name. Remember, Doeg is the one. And Doeg knew, I want to be clear, Doeg, Shaul's advisor, knew full well that the people of Nob were not in any way aiding and abetting a fugitive. How did he know that? Because he was present for this entire, David didn't see him, but he saw David. And he saw the entire exchange. And he knew that the people of Nob were absolutely clueless about the internal civil war between David and his father-in-law. Doeg, for whatever the reason, sold out the people of Nob to Shaul for absolutely no. So this capital is written almost as like a, not a tirade is the wrong word, but a rebuke against Doeg. But of course, again, included in that rebuke of Doeg is a rebuke of who? Shaul. David HaMelech does not name Shaul by name for two reasons. Number one, there's a concept of Kavod Malchus. Kavod Malchus means, you know, this again is another concept that has been lost on greater society. So Kavod Malchus means you respect leadership. You respect leadership, even if you don't agree with leadership. Even if you don't agree, let's say, for example, with a president or with a king, right? You have to respect. This is a very important idea. You have to respect. Now, in Yiddishkeit, that stems from the idea that we believe, you know, the Gemara says every single position of leadership is appointed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara Babasa says, even the person who's in charge of irrigating the fields, right? Anything, any position that is appointed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the President of the United States, leader of the free world, is most definitely chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not even a question. By definition, whether you agree or you disagree, that's up to you. But there always has to be a respect. There always has to be a covet for the leader. There always has to be a covet for the monarch. Whether you agree or disagree with him, that's your right to agree or disagree. But never, by the way, the paradigmatic example of this was Moshe Rabbeinu with Paro. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Sasemis points this out, always goes ahead and speaks to Paro in deferential terms. The only time that there's a breakdown is when we get to the end of the Makos and it's clear that Paro is not going to yield. In fact, the Sasemis says something amazing. When you look at the Makos of Tzardeya, frogs, so Moshe Rabbeinu says to Paro, Kitsei Siyair, I'm going to go out of the city and I'm going to daven. Says Sasemis, why? So Rashi says that Moshe Rabbeinu has to go ahead and leave the city to daven because there's Avodah Zarah everywhere. The Sasemis says something amazing. Sasemis says Moshe Rabbeinu was being spiritually and religiously sensitive to Paro. I know you do not believe in my God. And not yet, at least. And therefore, I'm going to daven elsewhere. There's an incredible covet for leadership. So therefore, David will not name Shaul by name. He will not do that. First of all, because it's his father-in-law, or was his father-in-law, and also because of Kavod Malchus. He will not do it. But so therefore, he aims the rebuke ultimately at Doeg. Havos, so Pasuk Dalet. I'm sorry? Doeg. He will not aim it at Shaul. He will only aim it at Doeg. But understanding full well that the rebuke that is leveled at Doeg also is a veiled rebuke towards Shaul as well. So Pasuk Gimel, number one. Matis halo b'ra ha-gibor chasir kel kol hayom. Why do you boast of evil, you mighty man? God's kindness is constant. Havos tachshov l'shonecha kitar melutash ose remiya. So your tongue plots destruction as a sharpened razor working deceit. So very strong words. Pasuk Hey, ahavta ra mitov. You have chosen to love evil over good. Sheker midaber tzadik tzali. You've chosen to speak falsehoods over righteousness. Again, a direct rebuke to what Doeg did. Pasuk Vav. Ahavta kol divrei bala l'shon mirma. Gam kel yitatz. So again, remember, as every single time David HaMelech, this is a common theme that you often find in Tehillim, where David HaMelech will rebuke the wicked and will ultimately say, you know, wicked ones, You think that you'll make advances. You think that you're going to succeed. But understand that whatever successes you enjoy are always short-lived. Because the Ribono Shel Olam always restores spiritual equilibrium. God goes ahead and always writes. He always does the adjustments. Sometimes they happen in our lifetimes. Sometimes they don't happen in our lifetimes. Sometimes it's centuries later. But wicked know that whatever advances you think you gain, the Ribono Shel Olam will adjust them. Pasuk Tes, verse 9. Hine agever lo yosim elokim ozo, v'yiftach perov asho yoz bavaso. Literally translates, behold the man who does not place his strength in God, but trusts his great wealth, he strengthened himself in his wickedness. Pasuk Yod, v'ani kizay yisra'anam b'veis elokim batachti, b'chesed elokim olam va'ed. But I am like a fresh olive tree in the house of God. I have trusted in the kindness of God forever and ever. Od chali olam ki asisa ve'akava shimcha ki tov neged chasidecha. I will thank you forever and ever when you have done this, and I will hope for your name, for it is good in the presence of your devoted ones. So what I'd like to focus on, so again, that's the gist of the kapitel Begadol. In a general sense, this is written in a response to the massacre of Nov. David HaMelech saying, Doeg, how did you ever think you would get away with this? There's only one way a person could think that they can get away with such a massacre like this, which is if you place your trust in yourself and not HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because anyone who believes in HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that after perpetrating such a horrific and heinous act, the Ribono Shel Olam will exact his vengeance as well. So what I want to focus on today is Pasuk Yud. This idea of Va'ani Kizayis Ra'anon, the base Elokim Batachti. I am like, so the translation over here, Kizayis Ra'anon, means, you know, like an effervescent, translated as fresh, a fresh olive tree planted in the house of God. Batachti Bechased Elokim Olam Va'ed. I have trusted in the kindness of God forever and ever. So what I found a bit intriguing by this pasuk is the fact that David HaMelech chooses to compare himself to a Zayis Ra'anon. Out of all the things that a person could compare themselves to, why does David HaMelech compare himself to an olive tree? What's the symbolism there? So if you take a look at number 4, Rashi HaKadosh says, Vani hanir daf ata biyadecha. Now understand, Rashi's interpretation of this kapitel is that David HaMelech is literally writing this kapitel as he's on the run from Nov. He left Nov, we know historically, again, remember we saw the kapitel that spoke about David HaMelech's time in Gat, where he pretended that he was insane. So remember, again, David HaMelech is writing this kapitel during this time, right after he hears about the massacre of Nov. He hears about the massacre. And so Rashi says, Va'ani, number 4, Hanir daf ata biyotcha eye, Kizayis ra'anan bebanim, ubnei banim, bebeis HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So David HaMelech says, you know, the way I'm feeling right now is that I wonder to myself, do I have a future? Do I have a future? Meaning Sheol is wiping out anyone and everyone who is associated with me. He is the king. Is it going to be possible for me to overcome these circumstances? And in that moment of self-doubt, David HaMelech says, Va'ani kezayis ra'anan. According to Rashi, the symbolism of zayis ra'anan is just as the olive tree bears fruit, bears the olives, so too David says, not only am I confident that I'm going to survive this ordeal, but I'm confident that ultimately, again, I will be privileged to be able to see future generations. So it's an incredible, sometimes the greatest, you know, I remember my grandmother, Zichron Levracha, who was a survivor of Auschwitz. So every time, so we'd come to see her with my children, so she'd always have like this glazed look in her eyes. And when I would ask her what it was, she always responded the same thing. She said, never did I ever think that I would see great-grandchildren. Never did I ever think, meaning I couldn't contemplate survival. I couldn't contemplate the idea that I was going to live. The notion of children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, impossible to comprehend. So David HaMelech is saying over here, right now, Sheol is killing everyone around me. He just, sometimes you hear of something so horrific, you say to yourself, you know what, this is an impossible situation. What do you do when the king of Israel just wiped out the city of Kohanim?
Who are these people? They're non-combatants. They are the religious leaders. It's the Kohen Gadol. There's one survivor from the city of Nov. There was one of the sons of Achimelech managed to survive. He wiped out an entire city. So David HaMelech says, in that moment, where he literally sees his life hanging in front of his eyes, he says, Yibono Shel Olam, Va'ani Kezai Yisra'anon Be'Beis Elokim Batachti. I'm like an olive tree. The olive tree is going to sprout fruit. I know that I am going to live to see my children. I'm going to live to see my grandchildren. That I'm going to live to see future generations as well. That's Rashi's interpretation. If you take a look at number 5, the Radak says something amazing. The Radak writes, Vani kizai sranan. He says, Hu ha-Rasha yibo, kinivo Allah ve'in lo tikva. The Rasha, and now again, the Rasha, of course, the named Rasha over here is Doeg. That guy Doeg, he is like a withering leaf. He has no hope. Va'avalani, and atzel milashono, ve'eya kizai sranan shel yibol alei li olam. David HaMelech says, I'm going to escape from the clutches of Doeg and his like. I am like the olive tree. My leaf will not wither. Be'beis Elokim, lefi shaya ne'etzar lefnei Hashem, kasher chashav hara amar, hinehu ne'kar mi'beis Hashem, va'ani e'yesham kizai sranan, ki ani batachti bechesed Elokim, velohu, ki hu batach ba'asho v'loirei Elokim. David HaMelech says, it's in this moment when I feel so alone, that I pledge myself even more to rededicate myself to my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does this mean? Take a look at number 6. Rav Hirsch takes this a step further. Rav Hirsch says, as for me, says David, even though I now have no abode on earth. See, what's happening over here is, remember, what's just happened. David HaMelech has fled to Gat. He's left the land of Israel. If you are David HaMelech, you have absolutely no idea if you're ever going to be able to step foot back in Eretz Yisrael again. Remember, he's made a conscious decision, I'm not fighting. So if not fighting means that I spend my life in exile, then that is what I am ready to do. I'm ready to live a life of exile. So I have no more family, because remember again, David HaMelech has a few hundred men with him. But who are the men who go with David? Right, so to be very honest, this is not like the upper crust of society. These are not his chavrusas from the base medrash. These are a bunch of hooligans. I mean, David HaMelech needs a group of people who are willing to fight. So generally, kind of going back to what we said before, the people who are always ready and willing to fight generally are not of the most refined character. So David HaMelech has no family. He has no land. He has no home. He doesn't even know at the end of the day who supports him, because these couple of hundred guys who are with him, if someone else comes along and offers them a better deal, right, or offers them a bit more bread or a bit more wine or a bit more whatever, right, they'll turn on him on a heartbeat. These are not a dedicated army of ideological followers. These are just a band of ruffians. So David HaMelech says, I'm alone. I have nothing in this world. My wife effectively chose her father over me. Again, not that she had much choice in all of this, but she did. She chose her family over me. I don't have direct, my family, David HaMelech's own family, we saw already, we learned in the past about his complicated relationship with his family. My father-in-law literally wants to kill me. Anyone now who's associated with me, remember again, after Shaul kills out the city of Nov, one thing becomes clear, which is, he's just blown the lid off this entire dynamic with David. Now everyone knows what's going on, which means anyone would be crazy to aid and abet David, especially since they see what happens. So I'm alone. I have nothing, I have no one in this world. There is only one thing I have left, says David. Even though I now have no abode on earth, I still have my inalienable rights in the house of God. And even though I have no shulchan of my own and must depend on the good of others for my bread, my lot still holds renewed hope and promise, like the evergreen branches of light, the menorah in the sanctuary. Man cannot deprive me of my spirit, which flowers upward to the Lord. And unlike Doeg, who puts his trust in his wealth, I still trust in the mercy of the Lord, not only now that I am forsaken, but throughout all the days to come. And this is so beautiful. David HaMelech says, at the end of the day, and this is an incredible lesson that I think everyone learns at different points in time. There is only one thing that is guaranteed in this world, and that is your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everything else could easily come and go. A person has beautiful other life relationships, as we all know. We know it too well. Those relationships could be here one day, could be gone the next day. They could be intact one day, be severed the next day. There are no guarantees in anything in this world. The only thing that I absolutely can rely on, the only thing that I can absolutely put my full trust in, is my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because that is a guarantee. That is a guarantee that as long as I want it, it will always be available to me. It's a guarantee that whatever I put into it, I know that the Ribbono Shel Olam will always reciprocate. It doesn't always mean God reciprocates the way I want Him to, or when I want Him to, or how I want Him to, but that's okay. The Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't work for me. He doesn't work for me. Right? He's not the candy dispenser that, you know, I put in my quarter and I get out what I want. The Ribbono Shel Olam operates on a different level, but what I know is that that relationship is always available to me no matter what. David HaMelech over here is saying something so dramatically amazing. In a moment in life where it was so easy to become broken, in a moment in life where it would have been so easy just to give up, just to yield, just to say, I surrender, David HaMelech says, despite everything I have lost, I still retain that which is most important in this world, which is a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. There is no greater gift that man can enjoy in this world than a relationship with Hashem, for one simple reason. It's a constant. It'll never change. It's inalterable. It is always there as long as you choose to access it. So in this moment, when David HaMelech has no home, no bread, no family, and effectively even one could say no nation, no nation, because as far as he understood, the nation would rally behind the king. They wouldn't rally behind him. Thus, as Ribbono Shel Olam, all is not lost. For I have you. For I have you. But I just want to, I want to comment on this in just a moment. What's important to understand is that a relationship like this doesn't, let me say it differently. People often think that individuals find God in times of tsar, in times of difficulty, in times of challenge. That's when you find God. So I will tell you, 9 out of 10 times, people do not find God during challenging times. For one simple reason, people are busy surviving during challenging times. Very little, there's often very little bandwidth for the Ribbono Shel Olam or for spirituality when a person is facing a life crisis. I mean like acute crisis. A person very often has to put all of their energy into just keeping their head above water. The time to find HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not in crisis. The time to find God is when life is, I was going to say quiet, but that doesn't happen. When life is more quiet, when life is calmer, when life is more serene. And by the way, we know this because David HaMelech, remember, David HaMelech's relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu was really cultivated when, we learned this, when was it really cultivated? When he was shepherding. Right, when he was shepherding for David HaMelech, those were tranquil times. Now again, I want to be clear. Does that mean that his life was fully tranquil? No, we know about his adversity from his childhood, from his family. But it was more tranquil. It was during those times when he was alone with himself and he was alone with the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's when he built relationship. And because he built it during tranquil times, he was able to lean on it during difficult times. This is an incredibly important yesod in the creation and the formation. Meaning, if a person doesn't invest in building a relationship with God when life is more tranquil, when that adversity hits them, when that adversity comes out, which inevitably it will, often a person's emunah is rocked. Right? A person doesn't know what to do. A person doesn't know, why would God do this to me? You know, excuse me, but when a person asks that question, why does HaKadosh Baruch, why would God do this to me? It's a legitimate question, but it also bespeaks a half-baked religious personality. I apologize for speaking in such strong terms. But if a person, if I build up my spiritual relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the goal is that when adversity does hit me, which it will, I'm able to withstand. It doesn't mean I don't have questions. It doesn't mean I don't wonder why. But if a person works on their emunah during the quieter times, the quieter chapters in life, then at the end of the day, when challenge comes, I realize, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're still by me. I don't understand why you're doing this. I'd like it to stop if possible. I'd like the circumstances to change if possible. But I know you're here. I know you're here. I know you're with me. I know you're by my side. That's why even David HaMelech, who in that brief slip, in that moment of crisis, says, Keli, Keli, Lama Azavtani. In that moment of weakness, remember, we learn that kapitul. Very quickly, he turns around and says, emotional, I know you're by my side. I know you love me. I know you're here with me. So this is an incredible idea. In this moment, when David HaMelech effectively feels that he has lost everything. You know, we as the reader of the Navi have an unfair advantage. What's the unfair advantage? We know how the story ends. Like, David, it's going to be okay. It's going to be all right. You know, so meaning, I know how the story ends. It's going to be okay. I mean, okay for the most part. David HaMelech's life is never fully okay. He has a tragic, tragedy that we've spoken about many times. But we know he's going to come back to Eretz Yisrael. He's going to become the king. He's going to be successful. He's going to have children. He's going to, Baruch Hashem, things are going to be good. But if you're David HaMelech and you're living, by the way, if you think about it, the way we see these stories is an incredible metaphor for how HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees us as well. Right? We're like David in the middle of the story. The story has a happy ending. The story always has a happy ending. Not necessarily the ending we want, but it always has a happy ending. The Ribbono Shel Olam knows that, and therefore he's able to calm us. We're like David running away from Shaul. The sky is falling. And amazingly enough, in that moment of existential crisis, David HaMelech takes a deep breath, says, Ribbono Shel Olam, I've lost everything but the most important thing, and that's you. You, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, are the most important thing in my life. You are the most important fixture. You know, a number of months ago, I'm doing a lot of commercial breaks today, but I'm going to get back to this. A number of months ago, in Mishpacha magazine, there was a fascinating back and forth of articles. I don't remember the author of the article, but it was on the topic of parenting. And the particular author went ahead and was speaking. He quoted from an Adam Gadol, a great tzaddik who was conducting a Seder, Pesach Seder, and the kids were misbehaving. Like, we're rambunctious, not misbehaving, but like, whatever, getting a little bit labor day. So the father says, children, I love you very much, but I love HaKadosh Baruch Hu more. And now it's time for us to do the Mitzvos HaLaila. So that story sparked a fierce debate. But what kind of story is that? Really? Do you say that to your kids? Do you say that to your children? I love you, but I love HaKadosh Baruch Hu more? Is that me? And the truth is, besides all the back and forth, what it awakened was, so is that true? Meaning, do I love HaKadosh Baruch Hu more than my children? Well, a parent says, I love nothing more than my children. Is that true? Meaning that to a certain degree, and again, this is not a topic for today, but the truth is the Jew has to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu more than anything. Because without HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's nothing else. What am I raising my children for, if not for HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What am I building my family for, if not for HaKadosh Baruch Hu? If the Ribbono Shel Olam is not in the picture, then what is this all about? Do I love HaKadosh Baruch Hu more than my children? So the truth is, my mind tells me the answer to that has to be yes. My lips are exceptionally uncomfortable articulating that, because there's something as a parent that just feels unnatural about it. But on an ideological level, yes, the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the be-all and end-all of everything. And by the way, don't do that at your Pesach Seder. I'm just suggesting. I don't think it works. It doesn't work for the Chinuch of our times. It does not work now. I'm just quoting it more just as a David HaMelech is saying, Ribbono Shel Olam, at the end of the day, I have you. And if I have you, I have everything. Really? You don't have your marriage? You don't have your people? You don't have a house? You have nothing. Dabba says, that's not true. I don't have nothing. I have something. I have the Ribbono Shel Olam. I'm hoping the other piece is going to come into play. I'm hoping the other piece is going to fall into place. I'm hoping the other piece is going to work out. But the truth is, Ribbono Shel Olam, va'ani kizayis ra'anan. I'm like the olive tree planted in the courtyard of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm good. I hope things will turn around. I daven every day for things to turn around. But I'm not with nothing. I have that which is most important. My relationship with you, Ribbono Shel Olam. Take a look at number 8. And we share with you one more approach. So again, the Malbin, now in numbers 5, 6, and 7, so again, they're not as much addressing as much about the Zayis Ra'anan, meaning the Rav Hirsch makes reference to the Beis HaMikdash, to the menorah. What David HaMelech essentially is saying is, I am like the olive tree, the olive representing the oil for the menorah, which we're gonna seize on that symbolism more in just a little bit, and I am firmly planted within your courtyard. In other words, whatever happens to me in life, whatever other relationships fail, whatever else breaks down in this world, Ribbono Shel Olam, I always have you. And the fact that I always have you is something so exceptionally meaningful to me in life. Let's continue. Take a look at number 8. Tachi, I want to share with you something now. We're going to go on a little bit of a detour. Then we're going to
find our way back. But actually, I spoke about this past Shabbos, and I find it to be a riveting situation. In number 8, Parshas Baaloscha, the Torah speaks about the laws of Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni, the second Pesach. Remember, again, so the Torah details, which is really a fascinating story. Torah is filled with complaints. This happens to be one of those beautiful complaints, which is a group of people approach Moshe Rabbeinu. They said, "Anachnu tamim lenefesh adam. We're ritually impure. We can't offer up the Korban Pesach. Lamani gara? Why should we lose out?" Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't immediately know the answer. He consults HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this births the concept of Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni, the Mekah Pesach. And the Torah says over here, if you take a look at number 8, the last pasuk, or the last two pasukim, Yud and Yud Aleph. Dabra b'nei Yisrael imor, ish kiyet hamila nefesh abaderach rechoka, if a person will be ritually impure or far away from Yerushalayim, olad oroseichem, v'asa pesach la'ashem, b'chodesh ha'sheni b'arbarasem b'nei arbayim, yasu also matzum rom yochlu. So Torah says, if a person is either ritually impure, or a person is too far away, and therefore they are unable to go ahead and offer up the Korban Pesach on what we call Pesach Rishon, regular Pesach, which is the 14th of Nisan. That's when the Korban Pesach was offered. There's a makeup date. There's a Pesach Sheni. 1 month later, the 14th of Iyar, that hopefully gives people the opportunity to purify themselves, to make the journey to Yerushalayim, and offer up the Korban Pesach. Take a look at number 9. So there's an amazing Mishnah, Meseches Pesachim. So the Mishnah says, Ezu Dech Rechokam. So the obvious question from a halachic perspective, the Torah tells me that if I am too far from Yerushalayim, if I'm too far from Jerusalem, so I have the ability to avail myself of the makeup Pesach a month later. The obvious question is, how far is far? Meaning, obviously, halacha is all about shiurim. Halacha is all about measurements. So what does it mean that I'm too far? How far is too far that gives me a valid excuse for not performing the Korban Pesach on the first Pesach and allowing me to avail myself of the makeup date? So the Mishnah says, Ezo der Choke, number 9, min hamodi'in v'lachutz u'kmidas l'cho ruach de Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, the distance from modi'in to Yerushalayim. Only, which, again, the Gemara identifies as 5 mil, which is a number of kilometers. So again, present-day Modi'in is not so far off from Mishnaic Modi'in. So again, that's a distance. So if I am that far away on Erev Pesach, that's considered Derech Rechoka, far away, and therefore, again, I am permitted to go ahead and avail myself of Pesach Sheni. That's Rabbi Akiva. Fine. Rabbi Eliezer says, Me'isekufas ha'azara v'lachutz. So this is actually quite amazing. He says, even if I am in Jerusalem, I'm in Yerushalayim, Me'isekufas ha'azara v'lachutz means, but I'm literally outside the curtains of the Mishkan, or of the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, that I'm in Yerushalayim, or I'm even on Harabayis. You know, Harabayis is a large area. The Beis HaMikdash itself only occupies, I'm not talking about, present-day Harabayis is much bigger than biblical Harabayis. Present-day Harabayis is about twice the size of biblical Harabayis. That's because Herod's extension. But the idea over here is, even if I'm right outside of the Beis HaMikdash, I'm right outside of the temple, I'm in Yerushalayim, but I'm not on the Harabayis, that constitutes Derech Rechoka, that could be too far, and a person could avail themselves of Pesach Sheni. And the question is obvious, what does that mean? If I'm in Yerushalayim, right? I'm in the Kotel Plaza, right? So again, technically speaking, that would be outside of the walls of the Beis HaMikdash. Kotel's not on Harabayis. I'm off of Harabayis. Rabbi Eliezer says, that's called Derech Rechoka. That's called far away. And if I can't make it up to the Harabayis, I can't make it up to the Beis HaMikdash, I'm exempt ultimately again from the first Pesach and can avail myself of the makeup date. So the Gemara says, the simple answer could be talking about what? How could this constitute Derech Rechoka? Person's ill. You know, so if I'm sick and I'm stuck in bed, so again, the fact that I have geographic proximity to the Harabayis is fine. At the end of the day, I can't make it. I'm sick in bed. I'm tired. Or there's some other extenuating circumstance that prevents me from traveling. Okay, fine. But still, on a deeper level, it is such a strange formulation of the halacha. Rabbi Eliezer literally saying, Misikufas ha'azara v'lachutz. Even if I'm outside of the curtains or the walls of the Beis HaMikdash, that's called Derech Rechoka. What's the case? So I'm going to share with you something absolutely amazing. So if you look at number 10, this is a beautiful statement from the great Hasidic master, Rabbi Cheskel of Kozmir. Rabbi Cheskel of Kozmir had an incredible bracha of longevity. He lived from 1756 to 1856. So he lived to the age of 100 years old. He was a Talmud of the greater, you know, Hasidic masters of the previous generation. And the Rebbe says the following. He says, Kevan sha'amad zebe pesach hazara, madua lo nichmas. So I don't understand. Ask Rabbi Cheskel of Kozmir. I don't understand. If somebody, right, Plony, whoever it is standing right next to the Har HaBayis, standing right outside of the walls of the Beis HaMikdash, why don't you just go in? Why don't you just go in? So look what he writes. Chazar v'yashav es hadvarim, meirov anava v'shiflus ve'ene atzmo. So it says the Rebbe something so beautiful, that sometimes a person thinks so little of themselves, that sometimes a person lacks a sense of self-confidence and a lack of self, that they're unable to move themselves forward in life. Amar Ha'ish, this person says to him, Mi anochi lageshes al HaKodesh, lavo bikrav makrivei psachim kedoshe elyon. Who am I to go into the Beis HaMikdash? Who am I to offer up a Karban Pesach? Bikesh likanes, this individual wants to go in, velo nishmu lo raglov, but his feet will not listen to him. Bikesh shenis, Kishenichnas Kashniyah, you know, the Mishnah brings down that the Karban Pesach was offered in three distinct groups. Three groups. So the first group goes in, this individual can't gather the self-confidence to go in. Second group gathers together. And what happens? He can't get himself. Kishenichnas Kashniyah, Vetekev Nasog Achor Machmas Busha, Vechim Bikarnis Kashlishis. So who we tell myself, Vecheskov Kazimir, something so beautiful. He says, this is an individual who is standing right outside of the walls of the Beis HaMikdash, but does not believe in himself enough to walk in. He doesn't believe in himself enough that he has the ability to enter into the sacred space of the Beis HaMikdash. So where does he stay? He stands outside in the periphery. He steps away. What Rebbe Cheskel of Kozmir is saying is something so beautiful, that sometimes in life, we are so close to actualizing our potential. Sometimes in life we are so close to crossing our finish lines. Sometimes in life we're so close to realizing our dreams. But sometimes it's those last few steps that are the most difficult. It's those last few steps that seem like a derech rechoka, so far away. But if we would only open our eyes and recognize how close we were, if we would only push ourselves just to take those last few steps, we'd realize our dreams. We'd cross those finish lines. Kevan, look at the last lines, number 10. Kevan sha'o HaKadosh Baruch Hu bekach amar lo, im kein es alecha tova bifnei atzmicha. So listen to what happens. Says Rebbe Cheskel of Kozmir, something so beautiful. Do you know what Pesach Sheni is? Pesach Sheni, the Rebbe says, obviously on more of a Jewish level, but Pesach Sheni is for those individuals who do not believe enough in themselves. They didn't walk in because they didn't think they could make it. They didn't walk in because they thought they had a whole long journey, when in fact all they had were just a couple of steps. They simply did not believe in themselves. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says the following. The Rebbe Shalom says, I see that you didn't enter into the Beis HaMikdash because you didn't believe in yourself. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell you that I believe in you. I'm going to tell you that I, God, believe in you. And what's the proof that I believe in you, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I'm giving you a makeup date. I'm giving you a second opportunity to walk into... Why would I give you a second opportunity? There's only one reason. Because I believe in your ability to enter into the sacred space. Because I believe in your ability to cross your finish lines. Because I believe in your ability to allow your dreams to materialize. You don't yet believe in yourself, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to us. But I believe in you. Pesach Sheni is the ultimate testament to the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu believes in our ability to transcend the Derech Rechoka and ultimately enter into our Beis HaMikdash. You know, the Beis HaMikdash is not just simply a structure. The Beis HaMikdash is not just simply a building. The Beis HaMikdash represents every single personal and national dream. The Beis HaMikdash represents that sacred space of our finish lines. The Beis HaMikdash represents everything that is beautiful, everything that is magical, everything that is magnificent in life. And the Rebbe teaches us that so often we spend our lives standing on the outside of our personal Beis HaMikdash, looking at the beautiful facade, how wonderful, how beautiful, and fundamentally lacking the courage to enter in. Why do we lack the courage? It's not because we're lazy, because we're not lazy. Why do we lack the courage? Rav Cheskel of Kozmir posits, is because we don't believe enough in ourselves.
because we don't actually believe that we have the ability to accomplish the things we so badly want to accomplish. Because we don't believe that we possess the tools for self-actualization. Because I don't believe that I have the necessary kochos to make my dreams come true. And so the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us Pesach Sheni, gives us another opportunity to enter into the Beis HaMikdash, because he's telling us, I believe in you. So if I believe in you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, and I'm God, I know everything. So if I believe in you, then it's about time that you begin to believe in yourself a little bit as well. If I give you a Pesach Sheni, because I know you could walk into the Beis HaMikdash, then you have to find the koach to begin to believe in yourself and enter into your personal Beis HaMikdash as well. So why is this all important? Take a look at number 11. So watch this. This is from the Sefer Tal Lechaim. We've quoted from it before. Tal Lechaim is Rav Chaim Cohen, known as the Chalban. Chalban is a Mekubal in Eretz Yisrael. He's alive, the older man alive today. They call him the Chalban. Chalban literally means like the cheesemaker. I mentioned this to you before because he worked in the Tenuva dairy factory. Dick, can you imagine this? I'm just saying, you can become a Makobol and still hold down a job. Right? So that's the take home message. Right? The idea being, say, he writes beautiful, he doesn't write this, meaning these are compiled based on the Shem Sukkot, he writes the following. He's actually writing a Parshas Baloscha. What he's commenting on over here happens to be the beginning of the Parsha, where the Torah speaks about the kindling of the menorah. What the Chabad is focused on is, why the fixation on oil? There's a lot of oil in Judaism. I don't just mean in cooking. I mean there's a lot of oil. If you think about it again, the menorah requires shemen zayizach. Every single thing that is anointed requires oil. Kings require oil. Kohen Gadol requires oil. All of the utensils of the Beis HaMikdash before they are put into service require oil. Everything requires oil. And by the way, amazingly enough, we know the one vestige we have of the Beis HaMikdash that we celebrate on Hanukkah is oil. That is the one thing we have. Shabbos candles also, but Shabbos candles, the truth is, don't have to be with oil. There's a mahodim to do oil. But everything we have in terms of consecration is always with oil. What's the pshat? So look what he writes. Number 11. Ela sha'omek gadol taman ve'inyan zeh. He says, there's a very deep lesson to be learned here. Hashemen, who sowed his kachos vatirus. Oil represents the very secret, the very foundational lesson of holiness and purity. Hashemen shuchom mamashi, mis'ala le'ela v'hofech la'or zach v'tar. Oil, which is physical, is ultimately converted and can burn as a pure, beautiful flame. Hashemen mevata es'alokus, haginuza b'socha olam azeh. Oil represents the spark of God that is hidden in everything in this world. What he's saying over here is oil, something that is physical and material. Yet, it can be used to create fire, light, the flame itself, which always represents the neshama, represents the Kadosh Baruch Hu, represents Torah. So oil is the paradigmatic example of something that is material, but yet could be converted into the spiritual. Dar zeh mispata gam betivo shel shemen, shutzaf lemala, ve'eino misardev im churmim achirim. Oil is also unique because, as we know, oil does not mix with other things, right? Oil always retains its own cohesion. It always rises to the top and always maintains just cohesion within itself. So the fact that oil does that indicates the purity and the purity and almost like the clarity of oil. Skip down a little bit. Skip down to paragraph base. Lefichach, nimshulu Yisrael l'shemen shebalaharos lanu al am Yisrael. Limros hayosam besocha olam azeh, v'gufam aluli achiz bera b'tuma, atzmiusam me'olam lo yislacha li olam lo tislachich. Therefore, says the Chabban, oil represents the Jew. Why does it represent the Jew? On one hand, it's material. We're physical beings. Yet, oil always retains its identity. Oil, what happens with oil, even if you mix it up with other stuff, it might remain mixed for a little bit of time. But at a certain point in time, it will rise to the surface. It separates itself out. He goes on, he says, limros hayosam besocha olam azeh, just like the oil, so the Jew often lives in this world, v'gufam aluli achiz bra b'tuma, atzmiusam mi'olam lo eslachol li olam lo tislachich. The identity of the Jew is never tarnished. The neshama of the Jew is never tarnished. It's like the oil. It might get mixed in, and for a while it looks like it's disappeared, but give it some time, and that oil will always rise to the top and differentiate and distinguish itself. Am Yisrael zach v'tar, hutzaf paragraph gimel, hutzaf mi'ala shiflus v'ha'ala michushala olam azeh. Am Yisrael is pure.
Am Yisrael always floats to the top from the lowliness of this world. Sometimes when we sin, what ends up happening is our oil which represents my holiness, our oil gets mixed in with a lot of other stuff. Sometimes after a person makes poor life decisions, so their oil which represents my spirituality, is mixed up with a whole bunch of other stuff. But what happens? For a little while, I can't see the oil. For a little while, it looks like the oil has disappeared. Yet, Umiyat Hashemen Nifrad Va'ola Lamala. But give it a few moments and the oil goes back up to the top. Umavdil Atzamim Ashkal Sahirim. It separates itself from the other liquids. Kach Gam Am Yisrael. Turn the page. Paragraph Dalit. Ruach HaTizazit Shenichnas Bo Dome Lekoach HaMa'arvev Es Hashemet Im Ashkal Sahirim. Sometimes there are forces. There are forces that act upon us from the outside world. There are internal forces, and those forces often mix up my shemen. They often mix up my oil. Kachi morida sa'ish Yisrael lemata lachit chalila. Kol ot haruach ma'arveves, nisha ha'shemen ma'urav. So you know, when the winds are still acting upon my shemen, in other words, when the chait is still there, the negative behaviors are there, still there, the negative habits are there, so those negative habits are constantly stirring the pot and causing my oil to be mixed with everything else. However, kol ot haruach tezazes nimtzeis, nisha ha'ish Yisrael lemata b'chait. Ulam, Miyad kisharuach posekas, hine ola hakidusha ubokas shuv. But the moment that the wind stops, the moment I break the chain of negative behaviors, the moment I stop engaging in deleterious actions, the moment I stop with the negative midos, the moment I allow the winds to stop, the negative winds to stop blowing, something amazing happens. He says, hine ola hakidusha ubokas shuv. What happens when the negative midos stop? The negative action, the negative behaviors stop? What happens when I'm able to stop all of the negative currents in life or in myself? I give the oil the opportunity to once again rise to the top. If I'm just able to somehow control my circumstances, control my atmosphere, something amazing happens, which is the oil. What the Chalban, by the way, is also, we'll link this to the capital, but just what the Chalban is saying is something amazing. People often think they have to go out and find spiritual, I have to find holiness. Sometimes all you need to do in this world is create a healthy environment. If I create a spiritually healthy environment for myself, my oil does the rest. The oil's there. I don't have to find spirituality. Spirituality exists inside of me. I don't have to find holiness. Holiness exists. Just the difference is sometimes the lifestyles we lead and sometimes the things we engage in and the behaviors we engage in and the negative attributes we have, they're constantly mixing up everything. So the oil becomes non-discernible. But if I somehow regulate the atmosphere, if I create the right avira, if I create the right surroundings, if I just go ahead and eliminate some of the negativity, the oil has the ability to rise. And once the oil has the ability to rise, then I'm able to accomplish all kinds of incredible things. He goes on, he says, the paragraph, hey, ze sod hashemen. This is the secret of the oil. Shebesocha olam hazeh. Kach Yisrael heim besocha olam hazeh atzmo. Ba'ali guf v'nefesh. Mitzuyim besoch gvulos hazman v'hamokom. So to klal Yisrael. And again, this is true as an individual, and this is true as a klal. That sometimes because of the circumstances, either that, bless you, that we allow for ourselves or circumstances that we are put in, the oil gets mixed up. And sometimes the oil is so mixed up that it looks like it has simply ceased to exist. But if I'm able to take control back over the atmosphere, and this is why, by the way, one of the most important yisodos for spiritual success is to figure out what is the atmosphere I'm living in. You know, people often think, as long as I'm not doing anything bad, even if I'm around stuff that's not so great, it's not going to impact me. It's not true. Everything impacts us. Everything impacts us. What I allow into my home impacts me. The people I surround myself with
impact me. The activities in which I engage in impact, everything impact. There's no such thing, as I've often said in this class, the only thing that's powered in life is maybe a drawer in your kitchen. But there's nothing else in life that's powered. There's nothing else. Everything either has a positive effect or a negative effect. There is no such thing as powered or neutral. And the difference is we don't realize that sometimes, even though I'm not actively doing anything bad, but if I'm allowing myself to be in negative circumstances, my oil is getting mixed up. My oil is getting mixed up. And so I wake up and I feel like, I'm just not feeling it. I just don't feel holy. I don't feel good. I don't feel engaged. And then I try to do my cheshbon nefesh. I try to say, well, I didn't do anything wrong. Thank God, like, I didn't speak lashon hara today. I didn't steal. I didn't murder. I didn't kidnap. Baruch Hashem, it's been a good day. You know, I don't understand why, like, I'm not feeling it. Because what the Chabad is saying is that sometimes when I'm letting the negative winds blow all around me, even though I'm not engaging in it, I'm not part of it, but if they're blowing all around me, my oil is getting mixed up. And the moment my oil is getting mixed up, and sometimes it's not even discernible, is the moment that I'm in existential spiritual crisis. You could be in existential spiritual crisis even if you're not doing anything wrong. If you're just simply allowing yourself to be around the wrong kind of things, the oil gets mixed up. But says the Chabad, the amazing thing is that if I just go ahead and I stabilize the atmosphere, I just go ahead and stop the negative influences, stop the negative winds from blowing, and I just stop, the oil rises to the top, my spirituality is restored, and I have the ability to create magnificent light. So now let's go back. Remember again, how does David HaMelech refer to himself? With this we'll conclude. How does David HaMelech refer to himself? He refers to himself as Kizayis Ra'anan. It is not haphazard that David HaMelech refers to himself as the olive tree. Why the olive tree? Because the olive tree produces oil. And David HaMelech is saying, Ribono Shel Olam, Ra'ani Kizayis Ra'anan Bebeis Elokim. Ribono Shel Olam, I just want you to know, life is exceptionally difficult. Life is exceptionally difficult. But Ribono Shel Olam, I believe in myself. See, David HaMelech doesn't need a Pesach Sheni. David HaMelech realizes that I know that the greatest Achilles heel of man, of mankind, of human beings, is not sin. This is a very important idea. Our greatest failures in life are not because we sin. Because the truth is, sin is part of the fabric of the human condition. That's why I always say, after 120, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells me, Silber, you sin, you sin, you sin, you sin, right? And it's going to be a while after he goes through everything. So I have an answer for that. I mean, I'll let you know how it goes, but I have an answer for it. Right? And Ribono Shel Olam, look, let's be honest, it's not just me. You have to share in some responsibility with this as well. You created me. You created me with my proclivities, with my failures, with my frailties. Okay, I didn't own them enough. I didn't fix them enough. I'm Moda, but you're a little bit of a partner in this as well. And even if that works, which I'm banking on it works, but even if it works, there's another divine claim. The other divine claim is, why didn't you believe in yourself more to accomplish all the things you could have accomplished? Right? Why did you spend your life standing outside of your Beis HaMikdash looking in? Why did you go ahead and live life thinking that you are B'derech Rechoka? I gave you Pesach Sheni. I gave you Pesach Shlishi. I gave you Pesach Revi'i. I gave you hundreds of makeup opportunities where I showed you that I believe in you, and yet you didn't believe enough in yourself to actualize your dreams, to go ahead and realize your aspirations. And David HaMelech says, Ribono Shel Olam, I will not fall into that trap. The one trap I won't fall into is the trap of self-doubt. The one trap I won't fall into is the trap of not believing enough in myself. Vani kizayis ra'anan. I'm like oil. I'm like oil. Meaning, what does it mean? I rise to the top. I recognize that at the end of the day, I have the ability to accomplish great things. Life, if you're David HaMelech, is not to say that life is not going according to plan would be such a trivialization of David HaMelech's plight. Life is not going according to any possible, foreseeable plan or contingency plan. David HaMelech could have never scripted this stuff in a million years. And it is so easy for David HaMelech to fall into the mindset of Derech Rechoka. That's it. I can kiss my dreams goodbye. There's nothing going on. I can't accomplish anything. Everything is so far. Abdama says, no. Vani kizayis ra'anon. I'm far from perfect, says David HaMelech. But you know what I am like? I'm like the olive tree. I'm like oil. I know that I possess goodness. I know that I possess holiness. Right now, there's a lot of winds that are blowing on me, and they're mixing up my oil, and they're making me feel despondent, and they're making me feel hopeless, and they're making me feel terribly lonely. But I know that I'm going to regroup. I have confidence. I have belief in myself. I have the oil. My oil will rise to the top once everything calms down. Ultimately, it will. And then I will take that oil, I will kindle it, and I will create luminescent goodness in this world. That was the message that David HaMelech was teaching us from the depths of what should have been human despondency and sadness. In that moment where David HaMelech says, I'm absolutely within my right to give up, I'm absolutely within my right to feel derech rechoka, that I'm so far away, one phrase, Va'ani kizayis ra'anam. I know I have the oil. It's mixed up right now. But I know that if I believe enough in myself, it'll rise to the top again, and I will have the ability to create beautiful, luminescent holiness and goodness. So if we bring this all together, David HaMelech teaches us many beautiful lessons, and we are eternally indebted for David HaMelech for the beautiful lessons he teaches us week in and week out. But from this capital, we emerge with two major lessons from David HaMelech. Number one, the great treasure of a relationship with God. The great gift of having a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it is the one thing that you could count on no matter what happens in life. Human relationships, and we know this, even in the most loving and wonderful of relationships, the people you love will fail you. I don't mean that like as a downer statement. I just mean it as a realistic statement. You know, if you have no expectation that the people you love you will fail you, when they do, you're going to have a very difficult time reconciling that. If you accept the fact that the people who love you, they're wonderful, but they're human beings, which means they will fail. They will fail you. That's just an inevitability in human relationships. But a Kadosh Baruch Hu, a relationship with God, is a constant. It is a rock. It is always there. It is a pillar to support yourself. But David HaMelech teaches us, don't wait until crisis to cultivate that relationship, because then you're going to be using all of your energy to keep your head above water. In those more serene, I won't say serene times, but in those more serene times, build that relationship so that you're able to lean on it in times of crisis. Because even when everyone else around you forsakes you and leaves you, just know that Ribono Shel Olam is always by your side. And lesson number two, David HaMelech teaches us that all too often in life, we find ourselves b'derech rechoka. We find ourselves seemingly far away from our goals and aspirations, when in fact, we're standing just a few steps from the finish line. Sometimes the greatest failure in life is not something we do wrong, but it's the failure to believe in ourselves. Kadosh Baruch Hu tells us, I'm giving you Pesach Sheni because I believe in you. Begin to believe in yourself. Kadosh Baruch Hu tries to teach us over and over and over that we each possess the beautiful oil. That oil of holiness, that oil of goodness, that oil of possibility, that oil of potential. Sometimes because of the lives we lead and the decisions we make, that oil gets mixed up and sometimes becomes undiscernible and unrecognizable. But if we gather ourselves together, if we try to stabilize our environment, if we try to neutralize the negative things that are happening around us, we give the oil the opportunity to rise to the top, and we could then use it to make something beautiful and luminescent in life. Like David HaMelech, we should be Zoche Meretz Hashem, each of us in our own way, to become that Zayis Ra'anam Baveis Hashem. May we be Zoche Meretz Hashem, to be the olive tree that produces beautiful oil for eternally planted in the courtyard of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This report.